Okay, so I don't remember what title I gave to Raffaella, but more or less the idea is that I will talk to you about complex organic molecules, but in the astronomical sense, because when I say complex organic molecules with a chemist in the audience, of course, start to laugh for half an hour and that's over. Mm-hmm. So for us, astronomer, I will talk about this complex organic molecule, and I'll tell you more, of course. And yes, I'll tell you, I hope to tell you things that to explain you that there are also the small that is very interesting, not only the big. And I'll tell you several, I'll give you several formation and so on that comes from collaboration with a lot of people. And here in particular in this audience, there is Paola, Francesco, and last week there was Serena that we are all, you know, copicopan. Okay, so let me start introducing why is it interesting, why it is interesting to study that and for you to listen for this 45 minutes I start really big because I think it is big, the topics. Life on Earth is based, one says life means really all living organisms from microbes to men, is based of some basic component that are the amino acid, fatty acid, blah, blah, blah. I don't enter too much into detail. What is important to understand is that in practice, life is based on about 50 small molecules, and real small in the chemical sense, that contains less than 100 atoms of carbon. It, of course, other atoms, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, other elements in smaller quantities, but of course the backbone of these molecules is carbon. Well, that's the reason why we say that life is based on organic chemistry. So small molecules.
Besides the amino acids, what else do you mean? There aren't 50 amino acids, there are 20 something. So.
Yeah?
What are the other ones? When you say 50, you just.
No, one. No, 50 small molecules. Yeah. It's not only amino acids.
So what else do you mean?
DNA?
DNA is not a small molecule.
Yeah, but the basic, the bricks that are the acid nuclei, they are. DNA is already a macromolecule,
yeah,
it's not a small one.
Yeah, right, that's what I'm saying, it's not a small one.
No. When I say small one, it means really DNA is already how these molecules
so besides the amino
are conjoined.
So besides the amino acids,
nucleobases.
The amino acids are the bricks for the proteins. But.
Okay. I don't know what you mean by small molecule, that's what I mean.
That's it. Less than 100 atoms are really the bricks, not how they combine together. Actually, it's how they combine together that makes the difference in life. So can I go now? So it's organic chemistry. To remember what I wanted to say, and it's not just by chance that also in the interstellar medium, the largest observed molecules all contain carbon. Actually, it's even more than this. All molecules with more than 5 atoms detected in space contains carbon atoms. I mean, that's we know that it's obvious, it's electronic structure, it's the abundance and so on, but that's exactly what I want to say. It's not, in a certain sense, I think that I will tell with the word by Christian de Duve, who is a Nobel laureate, and therefore his words have more weight than me. The building block of life formed naturally in our galaxy, and most likely also everywhere elsewhere in the cosmos. That's what is important. The chemical seeds of life are universal. Because after all, if you want, life is chemistry. It's nothing else than that. And is a particularly complex chemistry, but still chemistry. And Christian de Duve thought that it is so true, this this, how to say, sentence, that he thinks also that life, he thought, because he's dead, life is an obligatory manifestation of matter, written to the fabrics of the universe, because after all, the chemistry is physics, it's not anymore, everything comes really from the very first instant. It's just the law of physics. And therefore, of course, the consequence is that there are, according to him, there are many sides of life, perhaps even intelligent life sometimes. Of course, this we don't know. But what is important in my view, sorry?
Never mind.
Including on Earth.
Maybe. Maybe also. That's the reason why I think perhaps. I think maybe, I don't know, I never spoke to him, but I wouldn't swear that it wasn't for us. Anyway, this is the two red sentences are those that interest me, us, and that really interest, say why it's so important to understand to say that. Of course, life, as I said, is chemistry, but you know, it's not the chemistry that I or any of us is able then to really, it's not about that. What we can do, this is, we are astronomers, and the jobs of the astronomers to search for these seeds, to understand what is the complexity that can grow in space, and then of course we give this information and the next step that is not us, geologists, and then biologists, microbiologists, and so on, until maybe we will understand at a certain moment what is the origin of life on Earth, and consequently maybe elsewhere. Our jobs is the first step. Now that's obvious, but it is really an important job because it's part of a very big question. So what all this seminar is to tell you a bit what we have learned so far about all this. And you will see, of course, there are things that we have learned that are much, much more that still don't understand, and then we are still struggling to understand. One thing that we have understand that the process that bring a diffuse cloud that you are familiar with to a planetary system is tightly linked with a process that brings atoms to bind together and to make more and more complex molecules. So that practically the process from a diffuse cloud to a planetary system is also the process that brings atoms to simple molecules and then life are very, very much connected. That's what we have understood for sure. And in this sketch, I report that we presented in a review that we did with Paola, the five basic steps in this process. There is a first step that is called the prestellar core, and I will tell you more, a bit more in detail what I'm talking, but already I give you an overview. There is this prestellar core where the collapse has not set yet, that for the chemical point of view, as much as for the dynamical point of view, is extremely important because we think that there are the formation of simple and even complex molecule probably start there. The second step is when the collapse sets in with a certain number of consequences from dynamical point of view, from a thermal point of view, of course, is that there is a source at the center with an energy, and so the heating of the gas. And it is in this step that we see a lot of these complex molecules. And then there is, I wanted to change this image, I forgot. There is the protoplanetary disk phase in which practically the envelope is dispersed. We have a disk in which the planet form. We know that even though we struggle to detect them, but we know that molecules are also formed there, and I'll tell you more why. And then there is what we call in this review, the fourth and fifth step. The fourth is the phase of the storage and reprocessing of the grain mantle ices. What happens? There are the formation of this planetesimal. What are the planetesimal? It's the agglomeration of small grains with all these mantles that are around, in which there are plenty of molecules. And so some of these molecules become trapped inside this planetesimal. So there is what is the storage. They are sort of a strong box in a sense of whatever has been synthesized along the path. And then there is the last step, that is the planet formation, with the comet, asteroid, the rain, and there are plenty, of course, of processes and so on. But I think the message here that I want to give is that whatever it is, the actual process that form planets, including the Earth, volatile like water, and therefore whatever it is, comes from these mantles that have been formed at since the very beginning of all the process. And we know that because water has a hallmark of this, it is the deuteration, of course. I cannot tell you everything, so you just trust me, and if you have question, you ask question. Okay, so I will not go through everything because 45 minutes otherwise won't be sufficient. What I would like to talk to you is about the first two steps, that is the prestellar phase and the protostellar phase. Why? Because practically it is there in a certain sense that we understand the processes at work with respect, of course, to the chemistry and to the synthesis of this molecule, not everything, only with respect to that. And so if we understand what are the processes, how we synthesize these molecules, of course, then we can extrapolate to other environment, to other molecules that we will never be able to detect, because let's not forget that we will never really observe the ultimate chemical complexity. It's a definition, because the larger the molecule, the larger the number of modes. That means rotation, vibration, and so on. That means the larger the number of lines. So the same amount of energy spread on a much larger number of lines. The lines are weak, and at a certain moment they do make a sort of grass in which the information is lost. Okay.
And so, what is the gene size? I mean, what is can you quantify what is the point in which you
The size of the molecule. Nobody has done this exercise, but it is true that even at the level of, because it depends on the molecules, the answer is not so direct, because if the line has, is linear, like for example the family of the cyanopoline molecules that are chains of carbon with an hydrogen and a nitrogen, then you can have even, 13, 15, maybe 20. That is not a problem because they are linear molecules, a few lines. But you have, if you have molecules, already molecules, water, for example, they are three atoms, so there are plenty of lines. Now, we see water easily because it's abundant and it has a large Einstein coefficient, but already if you go methanol, we already start to scratch our head because they have thousands of lines. Increasing complexity, dimethyl ether, for example, CH3, start already to be a lot. So I cannot answer to give a number. What I can give you is the number of lines, in a sense, which is the more complex is the line, and the more are the number of lines. Chains are not really complex, that's the message. Okay, so, and third, the third reason why I will focus on these two phases is that in practice, the seeds for molecular complexity are grow and are planted in those two phases. So let's see what is the garden. So as I said, I will focus on astronomical complex organic molecules, also called in the literature, actually today I'm baptizing again, AGOM. Okay, let's start with prestellar core. Let's start with prestellar core. What are these prestellar core? I don't know how much people here is familiar. Of course, there are a few that are, and so this slide is not for them. Prestellar core are black spots in optical picture. So if you take a nice picture like this one, or even this one, all of us that study this object is extremely frustrating, because we cannot show this beautiful picture that you show of a cluster of galaxies that are merging. They are absolutely wonderful. In our case, they are black spots. The beauty of this picture is exactly where we don't want to go. It's not what we are studying.
Herschel's cried out to his sister when he discovered that.
Yeah.
And he said, Herschel said, "Mein Gott, es ist ein Loch im Himmel." He was shocked by that. He translated, "My God, there's a hole in the sky." That's what he said to his sister.
It was William Herschel.
Yes, yes. He thought, in fact, the beginning, yes, Herschel, these people thought they were really holes in the sky, that there wasn't a material. Yeah, that's true. Of course, that's not the explanation. The explanation is that the material, there is material indeed, cold and dense, so it doesn't emit in the optical, not even in the infrared, but absorb whatever photons are behind. That's the reason. They are close by, so that's the reason why they are at this point. Okay. So, in fact, the point is, they are very dense and very cold. When I say very cold, it means at the center, the temperature is even lower than 10 Kelvin. And when I say dense, it means that the density always at the center can be larger, 10 to the 6, 10 to the 5, 10 to the 6. Okay, so what happens? Because that's a description from a chemical point of view. This is extremely important, because what it means, we had the discussion of the grow formation of mantles 2 weeks ago, that we had a big discussion. And this is why we know that we don't make a grain in the interstellar medium, but we grow mantles. So this is the refractory, the silicate. And the fact that you have a region very cold, very dense, means that when the molecule arrive, it sticks, and remain frozen, depending, of course, we said now, I think more or less many of you have understood, depending, of course, on the binding energy, that means its real properties. And the result is that there are these ice molecular mantle that are formed during this stage. What are in this mantle? They are made of water, mainly of water, with a fraction of CO2, and then a smaller fraction of other molecules like ammonia and methanol. Should I say why is water? Oxygen, hydrogen are the most abundant element, so by definition it is. But how actually are formed molecules like water, ammonia, or methanol? CO and CO2, they just stick. CO2 actually is a totally different story, but I don't want to enter to it. But water, ammonia, and methanol, we think that what happens is that the molecule, for example, for methanol, the molecule of CO remains stuck on the grain, and then the hydrogen, let's see if the little animation works, the hydrogen go around on the surface, and then when they encounter the methanol, they encounter CO, they attach the various bonds and form methanol. So this is what we think, and this is something that is really the results of several works from laboratory experiment, theory, and astro models. And I would like, in fact, to tell you why we need all this. I think that, what is this? Okay, this is how it works. You start with CO, and then in hydrogen, and then you have to convince CO to take the hydrogen. Now, why we observe a molecular cloud with CO? Because CO is a very stable molecule. It's very happy to stay as it is. So you have really to convince CO to take the hydrogen. And then there are the other step is the same. Once you form HCO, the other H is very is taken very easily because practically you have done so much mess in this system. And this is a radical that another hydrogen is like drinking some water. And then, but then you have to convince again the formaldehyde to take another hydrogen. It's not easy either, and to form a methanol. So in practice, what happens is that, let me see if I had, what did I have here? Yes, in practice, already in the first step, here is an energy diagram. Some of you saw because discussed. Here is the change of energy at each step. You start with the system hydrogen CO, and the CO isn't in a, here our computation done by people that does this kind of computation. I am not able. And this is a cage, a structure of amorphous ice. You put the CO, it arrives the hydrogen, and now to be able to attach the hydrogen to HCO, there is a barrier of energy of 9 kilojoule to overcome. 9 kilojoule is 10,000 Kelvin. At 10 Kelvin, you forget it. It cannot be. So why in the hell? Let me see if I have, yes. And this is the same for the third step. So how in the hell this happens that we have in the interstellar space the formation of methanol on the grain, because we see, we observe it, it is because the hydrogen has a tunnel effect and pass the barrier. It doesn't jump, it just pass the barrier, okay? So you see, quantum chemistry. And that is helping us practically to do the, to build up what is our then universe. Water is more or less the same. Why you laugh?
No, I was checking the name of grain of the molecule.
Yes, these are these are it, of course. We have explanation, we have laboratory experiment computation, then we have to understand that, but is it enough for this tunnel effect really to justify what we see, to reproduce what we see? And in this case, so it's not enough. So we have the laboratory experiment, we have the theory, but we need also some astrochemical models, and this is indeed this model that believe it or not, we developed in Grenoble. It is called the Grenoble. That's yes.
So whenever you have this tunneling, you, that requires surface chemistry, does it?
No. The message here is the other way around. We know that the hydrogenation of molecules is through hydrogen, and the hydrogen is tunneling. Maybe you wanted to say that. If you wanted to say that, yeah. Okay.
I wanted to know if a reaction requires tunneling, does it require being on the surface?
Of the other tunneling, yes, it is on the surface by definition. Yes, in the space practically you don't have enough time because you have to stay there. Okay. Yes. Thank you. So anyway, these are the simulation of this model. And what is this? This is a large grid of models in which there are a number of parameters that have been varied, because you are not the only one that has simulation in which there are a lot of parameters that we just do like that. I have to admit that we are in the same boat. We also have a lot of parameters that we don't know. So what we do, we varied all these various parameters, and we see the distribution of the abundances that we predict and compare with observation. So this is this kind of analysis. So The models more or less indeed arrive to reproduce the average observation.
So what are the most important parameters that affect final abundance?
In this final abundance, apart the density and the temperature, but this is something that we can handle in the sense that we can measure, then there are a lot of parameters that are linked really to the surface and to the physical process that you can imagine. We are, but the astronomer, we say that a cow is a sphere. We are doing the same because, in fact, you can imagine, as I said, we imagine that this surface are rough, but we need to know, for example, the barrier, the width of the barrier for the tunneling. These hydrogen atoms that hop from one side to the others, what is the difference, the distance between the sides?
So you vary all these?
Yeah, no, we vary all these various parameters that indeed I think that intrinsically we cannot know, because even if we reproduce things to the laboratory, first, we'll never be able by definition, and second, in fact, even the surface we are not able to reproduce. So we have really to put theory and fantasy.
And sorry, what kind of sort of calculation did you do? So is it more sort of molecular dynamics simulation?
Okay, these are molecular dynamics. Yes, and these are molecular dynamics.
So next page, so that graph is a result of molecular dynamical simulation. This one
astrochemical models, which means
kinetic equations.
Kinetic equation, exactly. So we are putting together things. In the first case, as you say, molecular dynamics. So we take the results in this case, the barrier and so on, and we put in the astrochemical that are kinetic, in which there are complications because we describe indeed the roughness of these processes on the grains that are not totally obvious. But that's exactly the.
Thanks
to you. Okay, so let's go ahead. So far, so good. Hydrogenated molecules, we think we handled them. We think that we have understood this hydrogenation of other molecules in a way or in another, because the hydrogen can hop around and then pass this barrier by tunneling. Okay. Now, the big surprise came around 4 years ago, in which we discovered that these ACOMs, complex organic molecules, which means that are not only the little hydrogenated molecules, but more complex molecules, like, for example, as I said, the dimethyl ether, CH3OCH3. You have two atoms of carbon, cannot be just hydrogenation. And the other, what is? Acetaldehyde, CH3CHO, again, two atom hydrogen, the carbon one of hydrogen. This cannot be only hydrogenation, no way. There must be something else. And exactly, this is the, what is this something else? That's what we are struggling, and I'll come later to this. Just to complete this first, to say, start, these are the numbers, because everything, of course, it depends on the number, because if we had abundance of 10 to the minus 20, well, you know, 10 to minus 20 is Heisenberg uncertainties, I don't know. These are the numbers. They are relatively large, after all. 10 to minus 10, 10 to minus 9 is not so small, when considering that we have objects in which the abundance of CO can be 10 to minus 6. So we are talking about 1.1% of carbon, or even a bit more, in these molecules, 10 Kelvin. Okay? Okay, so problem. How those large molecules are formed? The tunnel effect doesn't work.
These molecules would be dissociated if they're in the UV field, in the diffuse isomer.
Absolutely, yes.
So basically, the environment is the one of a crystallar core. I mean, do you see the same chemistry from a protoplanet like this?
Let me.
Or even more complex.
Allora, yes, I anticipate. Protoplanetary disk. No, it's okay, because in fact I don't come back on this, so thanks for asking. Protoplanetary disk, there are regions in which you have, in the mid-plane of the disk, in the equatorial plane, the UV are shielded. There is nothing, practically. It's cold. The conditions are very similar, actually, to the prestellar cores. Really very similar. In fact, we had predicted, actually, we haven't detected yet, that the some molecules that are abundant in this condition should be present also in the disk, but on the equatorial plane, okay? Yeah. Then the protostellar disk, they have the equatorial plane, but then they have the region close to the star. Sure. Here I am the star. This is the region. They are very warm, of course, because there is a region, a star with UV photons and so on. So there are regions that are warm up to even the 2000 Kelvin, in which silicates are vaporized. And then there is also the surface. So you have all the conditions. And that's exactly why the reason I said if we understand what happens in the prestellar core in the next phase that resembles the part where the gas is warm, but that's it, we have understood everything. Because in protostellar disk is much, much more difficult to observe these molecules for observational bias, practically. Even ALMA, we don't think that we will go very far away, no way, because they are small objects. The column density, that is really what matters, is small.
The point is that they are dusty, so the dust helps in shielding from the radiation and creating the environment in which the
This is all this environment are totally shielded by UV. Here there isn't one single photon, actually. There is a big debate, actually, that there are some UV photon induced by the interaction of the cosmic rays with the H2 molecules. There is a discussion and so on. Of course, it's not the same amount of photons that you have in the interstellar. Okay? So in a certain sense, and this is a big debate, I will come later to that. Okay, so why we have these molecules and why we have them in the gas phase also, because everything stick. So what are they doing in the gas phase? Okay, so the second question, maybe we have an answer, because we had some recent observation. Our group and the group Paola, that by chance we arrived at the same conclusion, and we didn't know that we were working on practically on the same object, actually, and we arrived exactly to the same conclusion that doesn't happen often. In fact, there was a sort of miracle. And both of us practically claim that in the case of this particular prestellar core, what happens is this is the prestellar core. There is the condensation. Of course, there is the interstellar radiation that forms a sort of PDR, illuminate the skin of this condensation. And then when I say the density is very high, it is inside. It's not, of course. So very probably, what happens is that these UV photons, actually, what they do, they make evaporate the ices, okay, one by one, kick them off, and the emission also comes from this region, actually, and not from the inner part. And this was something that was already observed by Paola in water, okay, by some observation obtained with Herschel, a very beautiful observation. Their conclusion was that water comes from this border, the emission part of the line, because it's photodesorbed by these interstellar UV photons. So maybe the idea is maybe also this methanol that is where we did the analysis is photodesorbed from the ices. We were very happy. In the paper, we said that. Then, unfortunately, people did some experiment, the group in France, and what they said, they saw in the laboratory that it is true that you can photoevaporate methanol, but you know, when you give UV photons, you give a lot of energy, so practically you make it evaporate, but you break the molecule. So in practice, it's not true that you evaporate methanol. You make the methanol lift off from the ice, but then it's broken. So in the gas phase, there will be only small pieces, not the methanol that we see. So is it because there are other, sorry, just finish and then you ask, is this because there are other reactions that we are not aware of that reform methanol? Now you can ask.
I thought the water though was high critical densities, it was in the center of the core.
The emission.
But this is the part of the emission.
The absorption is coming from the outer part. You're right, the emission part comes from the very center.
Okay, let's go to the second phase.
So, sorry, can I ask one question? So that you said that photo desorption is not possible. So the, how about the thermal desorption?
Very cold. This is 10 Kelvin. Methanol is a binding energy that you need really 100 Kelvin, the dust temperature.
Okay, so the, even so that after the UV, so the radiation, the dust is still very cold.
Yeah, because the dust is still very cold because the dust, you know, it emits like a black body, and so it cools down very quickly. No, it's not. Okay, let's go now to the second phase when the collapse sets in. And this is the phase in which the sources that represent these phases are called, are known as class zero protostars. Maybe you have heard of it. And the region where we see a lot of atoms are called hot corinos. And the hot corinos in practice are the retail shop of atoms, in the sense it's there that we see a lot of these molecules. Okay, so let me go quickly. What is a protostar? Again, a class zero protostar again is the black spot in this beautiful picture of the Eurofugus, because they are still a very cold object. They don't have a star inside. They have this object that will eventually become a star. They are surrounded by a lot of material that absorb the radiation and so on. So in practice, the spectral energy distribution is a sort of a black body with temperature around 20, 30 Kelvin, so still very cold, not visible, not infrared. Okay. But it doesn't mean that all the envelope is so cold in this case, because inside, as I said, there is a source. The gravitational energy has been liberated, and so there is energy that eats up the envelope. So this is a sketch of what is the temperature and the density of the envelope surrounding these protostars. And of course, the density increases going to the center, and here we are talking about density up to 10 to the 8, 10 to the 9. What is important actually is that the dust temperature is increasing as well. And now, when it reaches the 100 Kelvin, the water ices sublimate, so everything goes suddenly, this is thermal evaporation, everything that was trapped in these ices, all of a sudden, poof, they are in the gas phase. And so we have this region in which there is the evaporation of the ices that is called the hot corino. Hot, everything is relative, is only 100 Kelvin, so you laugh as well. Corino is because it's a small core with respect to the massive. So simple, yes. to the massive stellar core. And so the chemistry in this region is dominated in a way or in another by the sublimation of the grain mantles, which means the previous history of the object. Okay? So, why I say that these are the retail shop of atoms, this is the first, the discovery that this small object, because after all they are little objects and there isn't a lot of mass and the temperature is not so huge, In 2003, there was the first discovery of GSOT Corino. This is a typical, I laugh now, spectrum in which you see all these lines are these complex molecules, and here there is a little list of some of them, and glycoaldehyde formamide, I will be back on that, other that I already mentioned, that there are the number of works on this. I think that I didn't really put all of them. I think that it's important to emphasize that since 2003, when they were first discovered, to today, that is 13 years later, we still have only 5 octocorinos. And this, and 2 were added in the last 2 years, last year, by ALMA observations. So we are in the dark, like you are about dark matter and so on. Our situation is not better than yours. Okay, I think it's important.
Why are they so difficult to?
Yeah, you see, because they are small objects. They are small objects. The emission is from these molecules. These are true lines, so you need sensitivity. Single dish observation. We were capable to observe only 3 of this octocorino. Now with the Plateau de Bure extension, that is Noema, and of course ALMA, we start finally to see more. And what we see is we are happy because we see that indeed, because with single dish, of course, we predicted that that was from a small region that we called the octocorino. But until we didn't imagine, now, of course, there were debates that could have been from other regions, blah, blah, blah. I don't enter, of course, in this debate. And there are indeed these little concentrated. These are various molecules that you can treat, but you are not interested. And they are all centered in the protostar, in the central object. And the dimensions are indeed this region, more or less, in which you expect the thermal evaporation of the ices.
So no, I think that should be a disk.
So far, we don't have any evidence that they are. Well, I should be prudent here. Until very recently, we don't we still don't have evidence that there are disks, but we are close to it. Now, with ALMA, we will have more because we have the spatial. There isn't one single, there is only one in which the octocorino has been partially resolved. They are all unresolved.
Languids
are the collapse. Yes, they are compatible. Yes, they are really, we are in the dark. Right? But this is a matter of a few years. So we start already to have some hint that could be. There is a debate, I think, that maybe we can discuss later. I think the others are not told, really very.
So I understand the detection of octocorino is very difficult, but so do you think that basically all the low-mass star-forming cores experience some octocorino phase?
But the fact that we only have 5, of course, is very dangerous to say that all of them are experiencing octocorino. Actually, we have another 3, maybe now 4, class 0 object in which there is no octocorino. They are the objects from the group of the University of Tokyo, Nami Sakai, Satoshi Yamamoto. Exactly. They are exactly. These are objects that, in principle, they are class 0.
So that you mean the low-mass star-forming core is the experience either so let's say octocorino or WCCC phase.
Either, I don't even know, because I think that what we have discovered are 2 extreme. In fact, we have some observation with ALMA, because we work together now with the group of Nami and Satoshi Yamamoto. In fact, what we are discovering is that we have these 2 extreme that we recognize because they are extreme. As usual, they are the first to be picked up. But then, probably there is a whole zoo in between. And actually, we ask the ALMA time for doing that. We see if they will give us. So I cannot answer. I know that no, it's not true. It's not to all the sources, which is an important point indeed. And this depends, we think, on the previous history, how fast was the collapse of the object. Because we think that if it was very fast, practically you formed methane. If it was a bit slower, you form methanol. And this makes the difference of what then you have in the gas phase. But this is details, but even though...
When you detect the hot carino, you do it through detecting the complex organic molecules, or do you do it by detecting, say, that the temperature is high, that you have lots of water, or
No. In fact, the definition of the hot carino is the presence of complex organic molecules. As I was saying, there are a few other class zero protostars in which we know there are regions at 100 Kelvin, but we don't see complex organic molecules. So, and these are a class of object that we call WCCCC because these objects, they have a lot of carbon chain, but that are different and not really used to do the molecule that bring to life, let's say. So, where did I? Yes. Here I reported also another case, that is the case of formamide. That is this simple molecule, and you give me a few seconds and I will tell you why it's particularly interesting, this molecule. And here you see an observation, a map that we just obtained with NOEMA, that is the extension of Plateau de Bure within. A project, sorry, so I'll tell you more later. And here you see the, practically you see that this molecule, let's put it in this way. There are various two complex molecules in this map in particular, and they do not come necessarily from the same region. It tells you, be aware, chemistry can be a bit complex here. And now why I put in pink the formamide, because formamide is a particularly interesting molecules that could be a key to life, in the sense that there are experiments that have been done on the laboratories that reproduce or simulate, try to simulate the condition of the early Earth, and by practically heating or illuminating with UV or so on, liquid formamide, what they obtain all the molecules, the species that we were talking about, that have both a metabolic and a genetic potential. And this is important because in the discussion of the origin of life, there is always well, what appeared first, metabolism or genetic? And this is like really the problem of the chicken and the eggs. So people are now start to be very hot about this formamide because it could solve all of a sudden the problem. If you have in your pond a lot of formamide, a lot means, for example, just a tear, goccia, come si dice?
Drop.
A drop of formamide, you may have the start, the trigger of life. Okay? So, now let me go ahead with this concept. And again, this is just to say that they are interesting on the astrobiology point of view, but even in general, because a considerable fraction of carbon is contained in these molecules. So if you want to understand chemistry, astrochemistry, by definition, you have to go through there. Okay, so we have to understand that that's here we start to enter in this another region of dark, because we really haven't understood much, I have to say. Anyway, what we try to do is to use, we use a correlation to try to guide us to understand what's going on. Because correlation among molecules can help to individuate mother daughters or sister species, okay? And therefore, then you can say something about the deformation mechanism. For example, there is the formamide, as I told you, was, we are now is very hot as a molecule. So we are all trying to understand how this molecule is formed in the interstellar medium. And if you, by chance, we do the correlation with isocyanic acid, just to be, because, sorry, I didn't write you for you. Isocyanic acid is HCNO. Formamide NH2SO, as you see, there is the difference is only one hydrogen. So one could, we observed a correlation between these two molecules. So we said, wow, I have just to put an hydrogen. What do? I put HCNO on the ice and I let it hydrogenate, for what we said. Wrong answer. Laboratory experiment show that you do not always come out with a full hydrogenation, because it's not simple. It's chemistry. We don't do whatever we want with this molecule.
Can you talk a little bit about how these experiments are run?
Yes, they are cold, which means you have this cold finger with a substrate that can be various. Let's assume that it's a sort of a silicate, 10 Kelvin. Then, depending on the experiment, for example, in this case, what they did, they deposit on the substrate, they call the substrate ACNO. They let it cool, and then they send the atomic hydrogen, and here it's already a first problem, because you want to simulate the interstellar medium condition, you want that your atomic hydrogen arrives with a temperature of 10 Kelvin. But now, be my guess, how do you do an hydrogen atom, because it's atomic hydrogen? Here on Earth, we have the molecular hydrogen. And what they do, they, with a laser or with a UV, lamp, they destroy the H2, they break the molecule. You break the molecule, you give a lot of energy to these atoms. So they arrive, you cross your fingers, they arrive with 10 Kelvin. Okay? So that's more or less the kind. And then what happens, they bombard and they wait. And then they heat up the cold finger. And they look at what comes out, practically. So there are various steps that you cross your finger that are correct. That's the reason also why we need also computation, because only laboratory experiments are so delicate that...
HCNO, how is it deposited?
On the cold finger, on the silicate, on the substrate.
It's not like the H. It's a different way to.
Yeah. This is they have it the gas in the molecules already done. They have a little nabumbola, a little gas of HCNCO, and they first put on the let condensate on the other end, 10 Kelvin. You introduce in the chamber the molecules. And a condensate, freeze on the cold finger. But the hydrogenation in this case doesn't work. And they tried hard because everybody were waiting, we are expecting, of course, we were saying, no way. What happens? Well, okay, details. At the other, on the other end, there was people in Pisa, at the Normale, they did some computation on the reaction in the gas of NH2 and formaldehyde. That it was thought that there was a barrier for various reasons, and these computations were extremely delicate, showed that the barrier is just what they call embedded. That means just below, and so it can happen, the reaction. So maybe that's the way
it works.
This is again the molecular dynamics.
Okay.
So simulation in the sense of computation, with approximation, if it is what you are saying. Yes. This is the simulation on the other side of the universe, the small, the equation. Okay. Another couple that has a clear...
This is this is showing that maybe it's physical, but it's not that strong.
No, it means that the correlation can be wrong. Correlation, we know, is not a surprise. The correlation in this case, we hoped that gave us an information is not giving us. Practically, it's not giving us, probably. It's just a case, in a certain sense. They have a progenitor somewhere, third generation, and that's thought. Another couple is dimethylformated dimethyl ether, dimethyl ether is CH3OCH3, methylformate is CHCOOCH3. So this is extremely complicated. So there is a correlation observed. And in this case, with Nadia Balucani, again, she's a chemist, we set up, we proposed that there is indeed the way to do it through practically the dimethyl ether, this molecule, is the mother of the methyl formate through some reaction, practically is destroyed by some, okay. I don't enter in the details, I know that you don't want to know. Okay. So let me go ahead, I'm almost there. In summary, COMs are present in an environment with temperature that range from 10 to 100 Kelvin. It remains, of course, the question how they are formed. Now, I will go fast on this because I know that, well, it is late and I'm not sure how much you want to know about details. What I want to tell you is just because I want to tell you that indeed we are, as you, struggling trying to understand even the small, not only the big universe. Until 2003, 2005, we thought that these molecules were formed in the gas phase in three steps. The first step is the formation of these hydrogenated mantles. And then when there is the sublimation at 100 Kelvin of the dust, there is the high sublimation, and using the product that were in the mantle, we can form all sort of molecules. Then there were laboratory experiment, new observation, a series of things that made that this step three was a bit, was problematic. Like some reaction that we were thought that would occur actually, in fact, it do not. So we started, we were really fault from the tree, as you say. And so now there was a totally, inverted paradigm that says practically everything occur on the grain surface. We are astronomers, I have to say, and so we are our greatest ability is to move the problems where we cannot, nobody can say it's wrong, right? I mean, we cannot say that this gas phase because chemistry tell us, what are you saying? This reaction doesn't work. And so we go on the grain surfaces that are much more complicated than gas phase. And therefore, before someone tell us that we are wrong, it will pass some time. So that's
why not?
Why not? Anyway, in this case, what the idea of this paradigm is that again, the step one is always the same, hydrogenation. But then the idea is you don't have really a step function. You have a warming up phase because you don't just. And during this warm up, what happens is, there are two things that happens, and I wrote it here, let me see. There are two things. The idea is that there are these hydrogenated molecules that are in these mantles, from time to time are hit by UV photons created by the interaction of the cosmic rays with the molecular hydrogen. And when they are hit, they break. They break and they remain the little pieces inside the ice. That's the first assumption. Second assumption, when the temperature of the dust becomes a bit larger than 30 Kelvin, these radicals, small pieces of molecules, can acquire mobility and go around like you have seen the hydrogen hopping, and then encounter and recombine and form these much complex, more complex molecules. That is the paradigm that, let's say, was dominant again until 2012-2013, until we saw that we have these molecules also at 10 Kelvin, which means that this 30 Kelvin is a problem here, okay? So there are a number of assumptions, that's obvious. I'm not going to go to all the theory, blah, blah, blah. I just wanted to give you a little example because it's, I think it's very nice, and then that's it, the chemistry is finished. And I want to give you the example of the acetaldehyde. The idea, if it is of the grain surface paradigm, is that on the axis there are these two radicals, HCO, and CH3, that at a certain moment they are allowed to go around, and when they meet, they form acetaldehyde. You see, CH3, HCO. This is acetaldehyde. So, indeed, you say, why not? We have the two pieces, it's like the Lego. It's not the Lego. Because it doesn't, when the two radicals encounter, they do not form acetaldehyde, but believe it or not, they form CO plus CH4, that is methane. Okay? Why? Because they are on the grain surfaces, so they cannot do whatever they want, practically. Okay? They have, in practice, if you think, to make them, let's go back, to make them the acetaldehyde, the two carbon have to see each other, shake hand, and we put together. Okay? That's the point. Is it true that they see each other on the grain surface? No, because when you do this again, this calculation, no, this is the simulation. Now you try to see what happens. You start with the HCO and the CH3, and you end up with the CO and the CH4. How it happens is an extremely amazing process that I'll describe to you. What happens is that the oxygen, the hydrogen, is taken by this molecule of water that now has an hydrogen to give around, and so it gives the hydrogen to this atom, this other molecule of oxygen, that now has an hydrogen that is too much, and so it gives to the CH3. So there is what is called is a molecule, a water-assistant passage of the hydrogen that travel. Actually, it's not the same hydrogen that is traveling. It's simply that, shake hand, and what it happens, it remains the CO and CH3O, the CH4. So it's not for acetaldehyde that is formed. The chemistry is not a Lego. One has to follow new rules. And so I think that we have to do much more work here because I don't think that we have then. Okay, so now we are back to try to do, to put back the gas phase theory. And I think the big improvement is that we understood that we have to ask to chemistry because before we didn't. So now there are a number of groups and we are working with people that know chemistry, and I think that we are doing some progresses. Certainly, both grain surface chemistry, gas phase, certainly they are both necessary. As we said, the hydrogenation occurs on the grain. Now the question is to understand really what is at each step an important step, or if you want, who plays when. And I finish here, it's more or less the 1 hour. Yes. And so the summary is you have understood that after all, these complex organic molecules are easy to synthesize, In the space, even though in the ISM, even though we haven't understood how. But doesn't mean that the nature is much more intelligent than us. So we knew already. The other things, of course, is that observation, we need our community really intrinsically has to be interdisciplinary, because we really need people that does experiment, that does theory, but this quantum chemistry theory is not people like me that is able to do that. Modeling, of course, observation, that's obvious. And from the observational point of view, we have a large program that started last year that is called SOLIS, Seeds of Life in Space, that is at the IRAM NOEMA interferometer, and Paul and myself are leading. And so we are start already to have some very nice results after we have almost finished 1 year. And stay tuned, because we expect a lot of new things. Okay. That's
I just wondering, so in both of those pictures you showed going from cold to warm, from 10K to 100K, is there any possibility that you could cycle many times from cold to warm and back again in the life cycle of that?
Yes. It is possible. In fact, one of the possibility also that we are, certainly we know, because there are these, I don't know, you seem to be informed. There are these Fu Orionis phenomenon that is in a bit later stage. What happens is that every time that there is the accretion of through the disk to the central object is not continuous. It comes with burst. Every time that there is a burst, of course, there is a heating source. And so there are cycles. And they help to build up. They help to build up.
No, but protoplanetary disk, just a little, I mean, gas dynamics can share, can move part of the material from one environment to another one and back again.
Yeah.
But you don't have Earth's pre-stellar core, right?
No, not in pre-stellar core. It's the accretion. It's linked to the accretion.
I wanted to ask you, you have this in this whole grand scheme that you have here, which is very nice, ACOMS, you haven't said anything at all about the fullerenes and their role. I mean, they contain a huge amount of carbon, and they're actually much more complex in some sense than these. So these are, I don't know how you would call them, the hyper-complex. So how
many it depends on what you mean for complex, because...
So you haven't said, I mean, all these molecules that you're talking about actually look like they're the simpler of the organic.
I don't know what you mean for simple, because
fullerenes have, you know, they have hundreds, C60, for example,
But you don't use to do molecules with the prebiotic
value. Well, maybe they have some role. How do you know that they don't have some?
Because we see in the, for example, in the meteorites, or if you want, you know, this is this famous insoluble organic material. These are molecules that indeed they are so stable that be my guess to break the bonds and use the carbon to do something that is something
precisely,
different.
It's precisely because they are so stable, robust, they can actually, they're an amazing reservoir.
Yeah, but it's a reservoir that nobody can use. Well, look at the comets. The Rosetta, now one of the results from the Rosetta a comet that is Chury, is that indeed is covered by what old Greenberg called the yellow stuff, that is even brown, black actually, yes, which is what? It is this kind of molecules. It's the same material, after all, that you have in your oven when you overcook or your oil goes in all on the walls of the oven. Use it to do something else. You have to scratch to take off from your oven. Same. In comets, this is the part that it remains there. It's black. You don't do anything with that. So, yes, It's probably an important reservoir of carbon, but is it really important for?
I'm not being a little provocative here, but your basic view is that because there are reactions on life on Earth, mm-hmm. which involve these kinds of molecules, and you're seeing similar reactions in space, there's somehow a direct link.
No.
And it seems to me that the link actually, if there is a link, it would come from the fullerenes, because they're the reservoir.
As I said,
comets,
I don't think.
Comets
bring first, I never said that there is a direct link because I certainly cannot know. I said that our job is to understand.
It says seeds of life in space. So that's,
yes, but this is the title of Seeds of Life. This is the title that comes, you have seen from where. And it's very clear, I hope I said. Our job is to see what is the complexity. I'm not saying that this is. I cannot say more. This is. No, but it's an interesting one, huh? At least for me.
What if it's a short answer? Any other questions? Do you reach chemical equilibrium in any of these molecules? So the abundances might mean something in terms of relative abundances from a chemical network kinetics.
What do you mean now?
So, do you think that the species are in chemical equilibrium, the abundances in these networks in Polkaritos, for example?
Who knows? I don't know.
But you have networks that
yes.
run, so.
Yeah. No, not necessary. For example, your question is if they are transient, practically. Is that what you are saying?
I guess what's the time scale to reach chemical equilibrium?
No, in fact, it's not necessarily they are in chemical equilibrium, and I think they are not, because the time scale are shorter than the evolution of time scale, are short of the chemical time scale. So it's not necessary. It depends on what we talk. For the hydrogenated molecules, once again, yes, we have time, we hydrogenate. For other molecules, for example, I don't know, formamide that forms in the gas phase is transient. In the sense, it is abundant in the early phases, maybe then. But it's a bit more complicated than that, because when you have this situation, it's different from a prestellar core and not Corino, because what you have is that practically the material keep coming. And they keep coming, evaporating. So, the chemical equilibrium is not what we are used to think about the chemical network. So it depends what your question what it was, OK?
OK, so, yeah.